This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So with so when we look at the the experience of meditation, the meditation process in its entirety. So when we first come to meditation, what can we actually expect to take place, to the changes that we see in the mind over time? You usually find when people have been meditating for maybe 4 weeks, they should see some difference, some change in the way they feel, the way they think, and just the nature of the mind in itself. But the most obvious things that people see is more, a greater sense of emotional stability. The mind is usually a little bit quieter, better focus of attention, in loose terms, concentration in daily life. But concentration relates to stillness. The more still your mind is, the more mental energy you have to focus on what you're doing, and that sort of magic word mindfulness, which is moment to moment attention on whatever you do in your day to day experience. So as one develops the meditation process, what are you actually doing with one's mind? What are you actually doing with one's focus, one's mental energy? And so, as we develop, as we learn to meditate, we we're focusing our attention. It could be on the breathing, on loving kindness, on walking meditation. And so, what is the purpose of that? What kind of results do we see? So, we're looking at a retraining. I'll try to keep it as simple as possible. We're looking at like a training effect on the mind. So we're focusing our attention, say on the breathing or a mantra, and we're bringing our attention back again and again to the meditation object of our choice. So, you know, what would be the results of that? And so the result will be an ability to sustain attention on the object that we choose. Because in our normal experience, our mind tends to wander, it tends to move to many, many different thoughts and feelings and mind states and experiences in our day-to-day life. You know, because human beings really do have quite a phenomenal memory if it's trained. And you know, you can put people under hypnosis and they can remember an incredible amount of detail from years previously. And so, you know, the stronger our attachments have, the stronger the feelings that we have as human beings, that in a general sense, it means that it takes, you know, the stronger one's attachments, the more the mind tends to wander, the more the mind tends to cling and hold on to things. As you, over time, as the years go by, as one becomes more emotionally cool, then attachment tends to become less, and then you have a greater ability to get the mind very, very, very peaceful. Because the bottom line is the more tightly we hold on to things, onto feelings and experiences and people, the more busy the mind tends to be. Because if the mind is emotionally cool, it doesn't go out into the world as much. It doesn't go looking for things. It doesn't go looking for people and experiences and want to travel and this and that. I mean, all these experiences may be beneficial, especially from an aspect of, say, wisdom, you know, reflecting. Anyone who meditates should develop an ability to investigate and reflect and understand what they're going through as a human being in their day-to-day life. It's not, you know, meditation, it's not just about getting peaceful. You know, you get peaceful for 40, 50, 60 years but if you don't actually make use of that increasing clarity and awareness and the insights which arise, if you don't actually develop some deep, you know, some understanding within yourself, your personal experience, you know, you can allow valuable time to slip away. Because within the Buddhist teaching, all the key principles of the path, the Eightfold Path, the 37 Enlightenment Factors, they're all wisdom related, and they're aimed at developing very, very deep insight over time. So regardless of whether you can come to this group as a Muslim person, a Christian or Hindu, and as you develop your meditation practice, that you really should develop as much insight as possible into your own religious teaching, regardless of whatever it is. And because it essentially, it's all very nice to get peaceful and content and happy, but the wisdom component has to be there. You know, you have say peacefulness and you have wisdom with the simile of Ajahn Chah, like two sides of the knife. So, you know, you get the mind peaceful and then you develop a deeper understanding of your experience, because that, you know, that is what really increases your personal development. You know, there are limits. You know, even for people who develop very, very deep states of samadhi, wisdom should naturally flow from that, because it does increase your awareness, your intuition, the sharpness of mind. And even many years ago, Ajahn Brahm made the comment that for people who can get incredibly peaceful in meditation, if they don't develop any insight, just naturally develop insight with that, you know, there must be something wrong, because it does make you sharp. It does make you aware of your experience, the way you relate to the world, the way you relate to other people, and wisdom. So you have, when you look at cause and effect, you have peacefulness of mind, you have samadhi, stillness of mind, and wisdom is the effect. Wisdom grows and develops from that peaceful state of mind. And you know, because the thing is, I did a bit of traveling in the past, and even say things like fruit picking and this and that, and sometimes you would meet people, you know, even at 60, 70 years of age, and these people, alcohol's got a lot to do with it, but some of these people, they would go fruit picking, but they also drank quite heavily, and there's a bit of a sort of a party, you know, sort of social type of mentality, but you know, some of these people didn't really get very far in life. I mean, it's like their choice, but you know, you don't want a situation where you die as ignorant as the day you were born. You know, you don't want that kind of experience. So you definitely want to be sharper, smarter, you know, and just overall a greater level of personal development in almost any area. Because I'm Buddhist, I mean, I have a very strong conviction in karma and rebirth, but I don't expect other people to take that on board. It's your choice. But you know, you definitely want to be more highly developed the day you die than when, you know, in comparison to the day that you were born. Otherwise, it's just a waste of one's life. So, let's see, what are we going to do today? Mm-hmm. Alright, so what I'll do, for the beginners, this one works very, very well for beginners, and then we'll go to the breath meditation. We do like the darkness meditation, and then we'll go to the breath meditation. So, what happens is, once the lights drop, and when you close your eyes, you see that dark colour, in the mind, and when you focus on that dark color in the mind, you draw your attention away from thoughts, from feelings, from the physical body. This is why this one works quite well. And when the beginners get a handle on this one and they start to get some stillness, then they can move to the breathing meditation if they choose. So we'll spend about maybe, say, 5 minutes on the darkness meditation, and then we'll go to the breathing meditation. We'll use a reasonably sharp focus around the mouth. The sensations are very strong around the mouth. It's quite clear, but it's still quite comfortable. So if you can get yourself in a comfortable position, and it usually works better, you know, if you have your hands together, if you have your ankles touching or your ankles crossed, you know, it helps to draw the energy, the mental energy, the physical energy of the body inwards. And you find you feel more centered, more focused. And so as the lights are dropped and your eyes are closed, just make sure your back is straight, head upright and comfortable. So as you see that, just that dark colour in the mind, I just want you to focus on that. It doesn't matter, you know, if you still think, I mean, even when I focus on that dark colour, my mind is very, very quiet. But naturally, you know, with the beginners, you may be thinking a little bit, maybe a little bit too much, or maybe there could be some, you know, certain feelings and whatnot, but just in a very relaxed way, just focus on that dark colour for 5 minutes, and I'll talk you through it. As you focus on that dark colour in the mind, just keep yourself emotionally and physically as relaxed as possible. So what I want you to do now is to move to the breath meditation. So for the beginners, I want you to focus on the feelings around the mouth, so the sensations around the mouth. Focus right there, and you'll feel the breathing right on the edge of that small area of focus. It should be reasonably clear to you. And so we'll keep this nice and simple. I just want you to focus on the feelings, the sensations around the mouth, and you'll feel the breathing on the edge. And I want you to do that for the rest of the session. find that you're a little bit, say, tired or sleepy, take full deep breaths right into the abdomen to maximize your level of alertness. And if you still feel tired, you can meditate with your eyes open. as you focus on the breathing, just keep returning, even if your mind wanders, just keep returning your attention back to the area of focus again and again at this point. you continue with the breathing meditation, if you find that you're thinking excessively about something in particular, it could be a person, experience, a place, just stop for 20-30 seconds or so and try to understand everything about that experience, that mind state. You know, you could be thinking of a particular person, for what reason, the location, the time, what issues, this and that. So try to understand everything about it, because the more we understand about the mental states which arise in the mind, the easier it is to let these things go over time. people whose minds are still a little bit busy, you can focus on that dark colour and the breathing together, like as a composite, you know, both you focus on the dark colour and the breathing together to make the meditation a bit more neutral. Coming towards the end of the meditation, so just see if you see any change in the peacefulness of the mind, and I'll ring the gong 3 times so you can open your eyes when you're ready. After a person dies and leaves, actually, were there any questions on meditation at all? Anything at all? Okay. After a person dies and leaves their physical body, what is your perception of the journey through to being reborn? Thanks and regards. So, the way the Buddha explained it in the suttas is, when the person's physical body dies, the elements of the physical body, they start to say like disintegrate. The mind element. So you have, you say, in a nutshell, you have the body and mind principle. You have the body, which is made of, say, like earth, wind, water, fire, and then you have the mind, which is made up of, say, feeling, perception, say, thinking in a general sense, and arising in consciousness. That's your mind experience. So when your physical body can no longer sustain your mind has to leave. And the many people's experience is that the mind experience, the mind awareness, it withdraws from, this is a common experience with people, the mind awareness, it withdraws from the physical body, from like 5 senses, you know, the five physical senses, ear, eye, nose, tongue, physical sensation in the body. The mind element, that awareness, that consciousness, withdraws from that, and then your mind will be reborn in whatever mode of rebirth which actually correlates precisely with your personal karma. So when you people go through their lives as a human being, or even a Devaloka being, and we make, say, good, bad and neutral karma, and that will determine exactly where your consciousness will arise in the rebirth rebirth process. And so, if you reflect on your life, and you feel when you look at the scales, you say both in a general sense, good and bad. If you feel that you've made more good than bad, it's very likely, much more likely, that the rebirth will be good, and the quality of the rebirth and the duration of the rebirth will be determined exactly by the quality of the karma. These things are very, very, very precise. They're not like, what would you call it, not vague, loose terms. They're incredibly precise. The happiness, the world that you're born into, the level of happiness that you have there, and the duration of the rebirth to the second will be determined by the thousands and thousands of karmas that you produce on a second-to-second basis. So, you know, all this kind of stuff, it's so complicated that a person's karmic experience and the ability to understand that, only the Buddha could understand a person's karma completely in every single case. Only one enlightened, absolutely really high-ranking master, the most highly developed beings in this universe, only one person at any time could understand that process in every single case with every single person. You will get enlightened beings with very really substantial psychic potential who can know and understand things which are quite amazing, that the average person, even the average spiritual medium wouldn't have a clue. They'd have absolutely, you can't even come close to that kind of mind power, because it's based in like really, really deep realization. You know, people are at different levels, but when you're looking at full powered psychic potential, the ability to see things really, really deeply over multiple lifetimes, it's got the level of meditation, it's got to be really, 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 really profound. Okay, dear Acharya, can you please give a talk on coping with emotional pain as opposed to physical pain, and which meditation would be most beneficial? So, can you please give a talk on coping with emotional pain and which meditation would be the most beneficial? So, each person knows exactly what they're going through. So when you're looking at emotional pain, you're looking at different kinds of feelings, experiences, the people that it's connected with. You know, people can be traumatized by other human beings, by even like mum and dad, could be even family members, and the effect. I mean, the effect can be different. The heaviness of the experience can be different, and the quality of those emotions that you go through. Some people have more potential to cope than other people, but it all depends on your personal makeup. People come into this world with their personal karma, and you know, I'm not trying to be funny, I'm trying to be weird or strange in a sense, but even if a young person is, it just may sound quite strange, but on a karmic level, even if a young person is molested by a particular adult, most adults have reasonable boundaries, and they have awareness of boundaries and the danger which that kind of abuse can really harm a young person, really harm their mind, and then, you know, then physically over time. But you will find that even karmically, there's a karmic connection with this type of thing. Why people are drawn to certain people, whether they're young or of a similar age. is that there's a karmic connection there, and there's reasons behind that. So with emotional pain, you really have to zero in on the quality of the emotion and the different kinds of feelings that you have. And then you look at, so for example, Anapanasati and walking meditation are good general practices, but you have things like the Brahma Viharas. You know, you have loving kindness, compassion. Compassion would, you know, is good for like emotional pain. If I'm hurting, if I'm traumatized, if I have a great sense of, say, loss, somebody really, really, really hurt me. Could be a marriage breakup, anything at that kind of level. You know, I need to support myself emotionally with that. It could be loving kindness, especially compassion. Compassion is the antidote for suffering. Loving kindness is the sentiment of, say, of friendliness, goodwill. So when I radiate loving kindness towards myself, I'm radiating that feeling of, say, goodwill, of self-love, you know, friendliness. Metta has a could have a dozen qualities you could name. Compassion could have a dozen qualities that you could recognize. And then you have sympathetic joy, rejoicing in the goodness of others. You have equanimity, which is, you know, all beings are the owners of their karma, they're the owners of their actions. So, but a key principle is that when you meditate, say for example, if I put myself in somebody else's shoes and I had a really traumatic emotional experience, what I would do, this is the kind of approach I would use. I've got some heavy emotional stuff that I have to deal with, and you know, it could be quite extreme. With all the different, you know, different say like insights, different practices that I've come across over time. There's a couple that you can use straight off the bat. I would use, so for example, if I could be a person who's gone through a really, really heavy divorce, you know, separation, all sorts of painful stuff happening there. And this is just one technique. I would focus on the full chest between the throat and the belly button, all those feelings in the full chest, top to bottom, full torso, because I really want to get in contact with not only my physical body. I'm going to use my physical body as a bridge to my emotions. And the reason I do this is that human beings are quite complicated emotionally, and unless you've got actually skills in this area, sometimes it can be a little bit difficult to unravel one's stuff, to release one's stuff that one has to deal with. So when I focus on this full chest, I can really feel my physical body, and I can really feel, because my body's connected with my mind very firmly, that I can really get a much more clear and tangible sense for where I am at emotionally. Because if I have no awareness of where I am emotionally, because I can run a multitude of emotions, I can run a dozen emotions in 1 or 2 minutes, you know, flat, you know, short time duration, because of the emotional complication. And then I would do that for at least 5 minutes, and develop that more intuitive awareness. And then I would start to question my experience, like what feelings am I going through, and just very, very gently. It's like being your own psychologist. You go through all those different feelings. There could be at least 3 or 4, which are quite significant. And so in the beginning, we just touch on the experience. We identify all the feelings that you have. in relation to this life experience. And then you could if it's a very light experience, you could just focus for 60 seconds. But if it's really, really heavy, focus for another 5 minutes. You know, really make the awareness and the intuition and the sharpness of the mind much stronger. So do another 5 minutes focusing on the full chest, and then go more deeply into the experience. All right. So I can label maybe 3 or 4 different significant emotions, and then you go one emotion at a time. It could be something like revenge. I could have gone through a really nasty divorce, and then I've got this, you know, feeling of revenge towards my ex. All right, so I go into that, and I question that. You know, why do I feel this way? You know, for what reasons? You know, the person is very, very clear. And on what basis, you know, time and place, you know, really go right into it and really understand everything about it, and do one emotion at a time. And the reason why I put emphasis on insight knowledge, because you know, samadhi and stillness of mind gets you peaceful, but it doesn't release you. And it doesn't resolve personal stuff and obstacles and problems in life. That's what the wisdom component's for. And you over time, you know, it's not like when I'm talking about wisdom practice, anyone can do this. You can teach yourself over time. It's just a matter of getting basic skills of investigation, and it's all about self-understanding. So one emotion at a time, go right into it, try to understand it, just in a very, very gentle, relaxed way, and then go right through those 3 or 4 feelings, and then, focus again for another 5 minutes, and then, how far can you take it now? And then what happens is, as you increase the focus and the concentration for choice of better words, the stillness, that you will increase the intuition into the state. So naturally, all these emotions are just not going to disappear in a snap. But as you move back between focusing and intuition and awareness and investigation of the experience of the mind state, you keep moving back and forth between focusing and investigation and intuition, and then when you reach a point, as you watch the quality of your mind, you watch the nature of those feelings. As you increase the understanding, and the understanding reaches a certain point, you will see you will see an experience of release. You will see the mind; it will release its object. It will release that feeling to at least a small degree, because the more you understand oneself, one's experience, the easier it is to let go of these things, these difficulties. So just that same thing again, moving back and forth between this focusing,
reflection.
As soon as you see the release, then you know that the insight is starting to bite. It's starting to work. And you may have to do this a dozen times. You may have to do this over time. If you've got really heavy abuse, if you've been beaten, molested for years and years and years as a child, until the day you left home. You know, these are life-changing experiences. They're very heavy stuff, and you may have to contemplate these things 100 times at least before you can release this kind of really intense, kind of nasty, kind of personal experience. It could be absolutely anything at all whatsoever. But as soon as you see the mind relax and the release, then you know you're getting somewhere. And as you investigate, you develop skills, you know, modes. You know, so I have a problem, and that problem's at the center, And then, you know, over time, I keep increasing my ability to understand and the sharpness. So when these experiences come up, you get faster and sharper when these feelings and these moods and these responses and say like, you know, you say like responses take place. And things like, you know, with those emotion those emotional based meditations, you can generate specific emotions to support what you're going through. So for example, if I'm a person who's prone to hate, you know, sounds a bit weird, but I have to make this quite intense to make it clear. I'm a person who's prone to it could be like hate and anger. Yeah, it could be, you know, something like that. And then I could use a compassion meditation. May I be free from hatred and anger. So I generate a supporting emotion which will counteract and balance that negative experience that I have. So I'm going right to where the heart of the problem is. But you've got to be quite precise with these things. You can't be very laissez-faire and very you know, skew it all, you know, all over the place. You really need to be sharp and very precise with this kind of stuff. And so then you generate a supporting emotion
for oneself. And
you know, you do the same thing again. You watch the quality of the mind. You watch, you know, whatever you do, the tools that you use to deal and balance and stabilize your mind experience. You need to see that this stuff actually works. You know, it's all very nice for me to say, you know, just to talk, you know, to talk and say this and that. But you've actually got to see that these approaches and these tools actually work for oneself, because people are very, very different and things work better for some people than others. What else can we do? Things like, what else? This might work, but it might not work for some people, but it can strengthen the ego in a positive way. Say for example, if I'm a person who doesn't have much confidence or very strong self-esteem, or I'm a very, very timid, frightened person, you can strengthen your ego in a positive way. But this is another thing. You have to feel this one out if it actually works for you. I've tried this previously, and it does strengthen the mind. But you've got to watch over it as you do this kind of practice. You can increase, say, like the sense of self, the sense of ego, but some people may need to strengthen their ego in a positive way before they can really start to let go. So it could be something like, I feel free from say anger and hate, or it could be something like I love and respect myself completely, or I have confidence and belief in myself. So you can use these sort of ego affirming type of statements, but you just, as you could use these, say, like once every minute of the day. It's very, very, it's quite light. Once every couple of minutes,
and you watch the way the mind responds to this kind of positive,
say like ego strengthening affirmations. For some people, it may work quite well, and so it's a matter of you use the right tool according to what's suitable for one. What else can we do? Things like focusing on, sometimes in order to, it doesn't all, it, some even the prisons, like they use this technique in many of the in high security prisons, medium security prisons in India. They had meditation programs running, and they got quite a good success rate. They had less prisoners coming back into the system reoffending. this and that. But some of the prisoners at Carnet, they don't like this kind of practice because it makes you aware, and it makes you it makes these guys very aware of what they've done, and the criminal activity that they've engaged in, and the people that hurt, because it makes you more sensitive, more aware. And these guys, they don't like this kind of practice. But you can feel it out. You can do a body scan. You can sweep through. You can the top of the feelings in the top of the head, and then the forehead, and then the cheeks around the eyes, the cheeks, the nose, the jaw, the ears. You know, if you see tension as you move through the body, if you see tension or if you see pain, you know, you can focus on that pain. It just slowly. It maybe you spend 5 seconds, maybe 5 seconds or so.
On a different part of the body,
and if you find like a painful spot, you know, there's something, you know, something wrong, it doesn't feel right, you can focus right there and you can question that experience. And because, you know, you could be locking up emotions in your physical body, so you need to question, you know, those areas. Because, you know, say for example, if a person is really, could be really tight in the shoulders or the spine, around the spine or the neck. If you've got a person who's very, very good with remedial massage, they can feel the tight spots in the body, and as soon as they start to put pressure with their fingers, it's quite painful. But it may be clear that the person is locking up emotional tension, like in the maybe between the shoulders or in the neck. When therapists, when they work on people, and sometimes they get an emotional response. You know, the person, you know, they can get like a flood of emotions as soon as you put any kind of real pressure on the neck or around the shoulders, because they, you know, they're locking up your emotional energy in those areas. So coping with emotional pain. So if you go to the Four Noble Truths, and which is the core of the Buddhist teaching, but you know, it's a very, very profound teaching. It's not like with the monks and nuns in general, we tend to focus more on say positivity and quality of life, because people don't, you know, they don't want to hear about suffering and pain. The vast majority of human beings, you know, they're interested in happiness, you know, quality of life, contentment, peace of mind, good relations with family and friends. And you know, it's much more beneficial. You know, you really don't want to think about pain and suffering too much. It just gets you down. So for example, if you see like emotional pain.
You can just question it straight off the bat.
Say for example, if I have an emotion like distress, it could be anxiety. I get certain things trigger strong anxiety within myself, and the reason they do is, you know, because I'm basically conditioned. There's a cause and effect principle there. I get anxious for some particular reason. Could be some particular person. Could maybe my boss. Makes me feel quite anxious when he's around, when I'm at work. So you need to go into it. You can do it in a very relaxed way. You don't have to be confrontational. Why do I feel anxious? You know, where and when, with what person, what kind of time duration, and what, you know, why do I react like this? Why do I respond in this manner? And then explore it as best as you can. You could spend several minutes on it, and then just drop it, just leave it, and then just leave it be. And then when you feel comfortable, then explore it again. You could do it several times a day, but the thing is, it's insight knowledge which basically resolves and releases problems and difficulties in life. Because if we don't understand what we're going through, how can you expect any individual to release and let go of the stuff that they're dealing with in life? You've got a person who's had a difficult life, difficult childhood for absolute minimum 10 to 20 years. You just can't expect that person just to drop that stuff just like that. You know, it could take 12 months, it could take 5 years. I've seen monks with 20, 30 years who are still working with personal stuff. You know, you're looking at lifetimes of karma. You just can't drop stuff like that, you know, unless it's very shallow. You know, some people have got lifetimes of certain moods or states or a kind of disposition. So you know, you can approach it like that, but just, you know, you can be your own psychologist. They're just very, very gently exploring,
understanding,
and releasing over time.
Good. And please don't forget to stay back for the photo.